Hey, hey, hey.
I should think so. Right. Today's the 4th of May, 2007. I'm in outside Pumpehuset in Copenhagen, Denmark. It's a lovely sunny day. Annihilator and Trivium are going to play here tonight. Right in front of me is Mr. Annihilator himself, Jeff Waters. Some of you might know him as one of the best metal guitarists in the world. Oh, don't make faces, Jeff. It's true. First of all, welcome to Denmark.
Yeah, of course, it's been a beautiful day, that's for sure.
And next question is, what are you doing here? I mean, I think doctors told you to go home because of your
oh, yeah, no, it was okay. I broke a bone off, clear off my ankle inside, just broke it right off. Like, a lot of times when you break your leg or ankle, there's a crack in it, a fracture or a break in there, and then it has to heal and fuse together or whatever you have to do to make it heal. But in my case, the piece of bone just snapped right off. Just a small piece. It's not a big piece. It's a small one. So I might have to go back and get it taken out.
Small also counts.
Still hurts like hell, yeah. Still hurts like hell. But the good part of it is that it's not a lot of it to heal. It's just ripped muscles and tendons and stuff like that. So it's like a really bad sprain with a break, also a break. But the break part just broke right off, so there's nothing they can do about it for now. You can take the piece out when I get home, but that means I have to wear a cast for 4 or 5 weeks.
Oh.
So I can't do it now. I should have done it now, but they said, I told them, of course, I have to finish this tour.
of course.
That's okay. It's healing up pretty good, actually.
Someone on the forum wrote that that you started a gig on a stool, and then you were jumping along anyway.
You just get so much adrenaline. Yeah. You just sort of play through it, and then and after the show, you're still, you know, you almost walk on it like it's normal, like there's no problems.
Mm.
And then when you try to sleep at night, that's when there is no sleep for 2 weeks now.
Oh, man.
And then, but you have to, in the daytime, you have to walk around a little bit on it, like I just did now. First of all, because of the beautiful city and sightseeing, but also because you have to loosen it up, because if you're going to play on stage at night, you can't just lie there all day and your leg freezes.
Really bad.
Yeah, so I just keep it all loose and no big deal. Just play through it and in the heels, and who cares? It's metal.
Well, I appreciate it because I'm looking forward to
it
tonight. You know,
be fun.
Yeah, but apart from the ankle, how's the tour been going so far?
Good. All for us, it's been great.
Yeah, everything's
fantastic.
Working with Alex and Brian. The new people. And
well, it's slow. It's slow to. It always is a slow thing, no matter who the band is.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it takes a new lineup 5-6 shows to get. Mm-hmm. We say in the swing of things, to get tighter and get together, you know, more. And sometimes it takes a couple of weeks, and it's taken this one a couple of weeks for sure.
Mm.
But we're just right about now, almost halfway through this tour, and we're starting to feel like it's getting better.
Really gelled together now.
I mean, fans think, I mean, even the first shows we did that we thought really we played terrible at, fans would say, wow, that's the tightest thing I've ever heard, so we just...
Excellent.
Yeah.
And your new guitarist, Dave Patton?
Yeah.
That's...
He's been our singer for four years or so, and three albums, and it's only since last summer that he started. We said, hey, why don't we just get him to sing and play? It's a hard job to do, but he can do it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. And also, I mean, one thing I've been thinking about is, how is it to tour with a young band like Trivium? I mean, they're
great.
All hot now, and you know, and you're supporting. You're an old fart. Compared to them.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, anyway you turn it. So, how's that?
Well, it's good for us. The first 3 weeks of this tour were in the UK, which is an area that we don't sell a lot of records. We don't really do well.
Uh-huh.
And they are huge there. We're playing 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 people every night for 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say about 95% of the crowd didn't know Annihilator. And you could tell the ones that did, but the 95% didn't. And at the beginning it was a little bit scary, but then you realized that they were watching you the whole time. And then my partner back in Canada said, yeah, it's on the Trivium forums and all over the internet and stuff. People would these Trivium fans would watch your show, and then the next night or that night or something, they go home and post on forums and say, wow, we didn't know who this band was. And some of them thought we were a new band, maybe. And, and our label says that our record sales have been just magically going up very quickly in the UK now. So
all the more important to keep that fracture in place.
Yeah.
Keep playing, yeah?
Oh, yeah. No, that's not going to bother me.
No.
I wrap it up in bandages and take some painkillers.
Of course.
No, but it's, yeah, that part of it was great, and then we got out of the UK, and of course, where we are known outside of the UK a lot more, not so much in Scandinavia, but everywhere else in Europe, we do well, and that's part of the reason also why Trivium took us, is because we help them sell tickets in the rest of Europe, but they also took us in the UK, which they didn't have to, as a favor. They're just really cool about that, helping us out.
Last summer, you decided to postpone most of the European tour, say a couple of festival gigs, because you were recording metal at the time, or had to record metal. And we were all looking forward to that new opus, but I think it made a little sense to most of the European fans. I mean, people really wanted to see you. Was it really that crucial to record precisely at that time? Or?
Yeah, we wouldn't have been able to release the album at this time if we had done that whole run. That was about a month we were going to tour. So that would have meant, you know, some rehearsals, that, and then it would have been 2 months out. Then we would have missed the release of this one. It probably wouldn't have come out till September. But we knew about this Trivium tour for a long time.
Right, so it has
so
to be
So we
time.
Had to do it, yeah.
Yeah, of course. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Metal is an excellent album. It must have been a very different experience for you with all the guest stars appearing on the album. How did the involvement of this plethora of metal stars come about? And do you think that it actually made a different album for you? My sense is that it would have been the same album, because you are you and do what you do.
I think it was a cool thing for me personally and professionally, and it gave a little extra attention to the record. But the guests came on the record at the end of it, when it was pretty much almost finished, and it was not planned that way. I got a call from Alexi Leho and Michael Amott, Arch Enemy, and Trivium. It's Corey. And all on the same day. Corey was in the studio doing their record in Florida, and Amott was on tour with Arch Enemy somewhere, and they just both called me the same day. One of them had said, I still haven't figured out which one. One of them had said, hey, so if Annihilator Records not finished yet, what do you think about me doing a short solo on it? And I said, oh, wow, that'd be cool. I think it was Corey. And I said, sure, are you in the studio now? Yeah, it must have been Corey. And sure, it sounds great. And then Amott called me after, I guess. So I figured, well, I might as well ask Michael then.
Here's the concept.
Yeah, so, and then I just built it from there. I thought, well, I could call up some really big names that I know, and maybe I could really make this a big superstar, like a really big superstar. And then I kind of stopped thinking like that and said, no, why don't we just stick to with Corey and Michael. The reason why they wanted to be on was because they liked my music and guitar playing, and they liked some of our albums and songs. And I thought, well, why don't I just call up people that maybe I've influenced a little bit, or that, but I also have to like them and what they do, and friends, you know. So you add that up, and just called Alexi and guys from Lamb of God, Willie, and just called a bunch of people that I knew that liked Annihilator. You know, hey, what's up? Lots of money for me?
It surprised me a bit to see Jeff Loomis on the record.
Yeah,
because there was, correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, there was some sort of strike between the two of you?
Some
mudslinging of some sort?
I just made a comment to get some attention, just to playfully, just playing. And I made a comment about, to a journalist, about I was one of the, yeah, very specific too, I was one of the, which means not the fastest, one of the fastest, tightest rhythm guitar pickers. So those are very four specific things.
Indeed.
That's the picking hand only. It's not like blah, 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 not that. It's the actual picking. And I said that because I actually am probably one of the, but all it has to be all together, one of the tightest, fastest rhythm guitar picking. That's not lead guitar, that's not, there's a whole bunch of different things in there. And that I probably am. Maybe not the fastest, but I'm in there. But I knew what would happen is people would right away say that Waters said that he's the fastest guitar player in the world. And that's not
someone
true.
Someone would react.
It's impossible because there's some incredibly fast players out there that are just, I couldn't even touch them. But, of course, it got taken the way I was hoping it got taken. And but a journalist asked Jeff Loomis, who had a few beers, I think, that night on the tour bus or something, and had just said it jokingly, like, yeah, Waters says he's the fastest guitar player, and Loomis made a joke back to him, something about, oh, he deserves a punch in the head or something. And then you take that quote out, and you put it on the internet, and it looks really
bad.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's a friend of mine since we toured with him in 2000, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I shared a bus with him for a couple of months, 2-3 months in Europe on a tour, and... so I called him after that, and I said, thanks, Jeff. And he was like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say it. And I'm like, okay, then you owe me, I want you on my album. So he likes Annihilator a lot, too. There's a couple of records he likes of ours, and one called Criteria for a Black Widow, and one called All For You. And so I asked him, and he was like, yeah, fuck yeah, let's do it, you know. I would have been the same if he'd asked me to play on his album.
Hint.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
I think the most talked about song on the album is probably Troubled Suicide, because of Danko Jones and Angela Gossow's involvement. And I suppose because it has some sort of hit potential as well. Are you going to do something extra to promote that song to reach a wider audience?
No, it's just... The Annihilator's always had different albums sometimes, but everything from love songs, ballads, instrumentals to...
True.
Thrash, speed, hate, death, metal, whatever, and everything in between. And the days for Annihilator, you know, with the title Annihilator, you're not going to get on heavy rotation on any kind of radio.
Well, you'd never know.
And a couple of Suicide, just another song. It just happens to be... The music's pretty melodic, which is nothing different for Annihilator. But then you have another guy singing on it, Danko Jones, with his writing style.
He's got a different style.
He wrote the lyrics for that one.
Mm.
And so that's what makes it stand out way different than the other songs. But it's a good song. It's one of my favorite songs to listen to. It's different.
It's
quite different.
It's very different.
It's the one that doesn't seem to fit on the album, which is cool.
Yeah. I like that too, actually.
Yeah.
The cover artwork for All For You, as we just mentioned, and Schizo Deluxe,
yep.
It's fabulous. I mean, I love this cover artwork. This one is a lot less, should I say, lush, or a lot less sort of, where's the sudden minimalism?
We've always done these Schizo Deluxe and this one. They were always artwork and dolls and girls and images and things and all that, and this is pretty straightforward. This is just a metal record.
Ah.
I mean, it's got a lot of different metal players from many different styles of metal bands. It's just another
statement.
It was actually just started off as like AnnihilatorMetal.com was our website as we started. So the name was always there. And when all these guests ended up getting on it at the end, and I was reading the list of all the people, I was like, wow, that's a lot of different metal players. And then that's when that name just seemed to fit.
Mm.
So it's not meant to be, for once, not meant to be some great artwork. It's just a simple metal. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
simple. Yeah, it's really, you're buying it for the music, not the cover.
That's true.
However, the booklet guy is amazing. He's the
guy
that did the last couple of Annihilator CDs. He's incredible.
True. And it's cool, really cool. One of the things I loved about Alice and Neverland and Set the World on Fire was the explanatory notes you put on for each song.
Yeah.
What happened to those notes?
I do them sometimes. I got them on some records, but...
I think there's a line on King of the Kill, maybe there's no remains. You have just one line.
Well, if you look at the booklet, I had no room for that.
No, that's true.
No room this time. Maybe on another album for sure.
Mm. Because it made it sort of personal in a different way that no one else did within
this genre. Yeah, it depends. I mean, this album, there's a few, 3 or 4 songs about a similar subject, and I didn't want to really go into each of them 4 times in a row. But the main reason was there wasn't any room in the booklet.
They
give you a certain amount of pages that you can have for it, and I filled it up really quickly with all these companies that I endorse.
What's going on here? I mean, we're moving on to, art, business, what's that? I mean,
No, it's just
we're not trying to kid anyone. I mean,
a lot of these companies that, for example, take guitar strings just to do the Trivium tour to get strings for all our guitars and basses for the three of us. It costs a band probably $4,000 to get. So a lot of these companies, like Ernie Ball, for example, they set most of that for free, which is, you know, it's people don't usually send stuff for free anymore. You usually have to pay an artist discount, 50% off, something like that. And a lot of the companies that I've been working with, like Gibson too, and Rand guitars especially, a lot of times you know, companies don't have money to throw away to give you $20,000 worth of guitars. And that's what these companies did. And I was very polite and nice, and they liked me, and they liked the music. And I didn't say I want freebies, but they were giving us free stuff. The amp company, too. But small company from Poland called Laboga Amps. And I kind of had an idea of, well, you know, maybe I should do something for these guys, because everybody on this thing has given us stuff. And in a way, we don't really deserve to be given all this stuff. Most bands pay for this stuff. Something.
So that explains it.
That's why I put it in. I just wanted to say thanks for everything. And then the companies were very, very shocked when they got the booklet, because companies pay a lot of money for advertising for stuff like that. And I just put it on a CD that's going to, about 1,000 of these things going to be made, you know?
Mm-hmm. True.
So it was like a good faith gesture to them, you know? And also, yeah, it helps too. Some fans always ask me, what do you use? What kind of amps do you use? What kind of strings? There you go.
That's the answer for a lot of questions, yeah. The bonus CD. That's with this version of Meta was. I think it's a slightly odd selection of songs. It doesn't necessarily represent the creme de la creme of Annihilator, as I know.
Oh no, it can't, because those are owned by different record companies.
These
songs are from SPV's catalog that they have. They have a lot of the middle albums that we've done for Europe, from King of the Kill up to Carnival Diablos and Waking the Fury. So they got. Not all of them, but they got
it's a contractual.
They have about
95
to 2002. Yeah. Some of them. So they just picked a few songs from each album and said, "Here you go." So it's not touted. It's not a statement as the best of. It shouldn't say that, at least. It's some of the best of that time. But it's like just thrown in, really, not for the older fans. It was. I didn't want to put any bonus things on here because I thought, "Fuck it, 12 guests on the CD. That's a bonus." It's okay, another 5-10 minutes I got, at least, for sure. But this is more for the new fans who are getting this record and going, hey,
sure,
this is cool,
sense.
But, oh, they have 11 more CDs?
Yeah, true. It's commonly known that singer's been in and out of Annihilator, and Dave just made the record. Three studio albums.
They tied me.
Did you ever consider pulling all the singers into to one album?
No, absolutely not. No, that's the thing about Annihilator, is each album has its own style and different sound and different, sometimes different people.
Yeah, sometimes different
and that's,
things.
Yeah, and you can't, I think we probably would have been finished if we carried on Alice in Hell and after that and kept the same lineup, the same singer, and done another couple albums. I think we would have been finished. Probably a 2-3 albums into it, it would have been the end of it. That's so. Ironically, I think having the changes and different styles and all these different styles of metal music and different productions and sounds and members, that's why we're on 12th record right now. Because of those changes. There's no other reason.
Yeah. Of course. You've often stated that you're a big fan of AC/DC and Priest. What's the hot stuff right now in your world? Not necessarily in terms of sales, but for you.
What I like?
Mm-hmm.
I always go back to, I'm just rediscovering old metal CDs from the 80s. Yeah. Some from the late 70s, but there's just too much good music back there that and a lot of today's music is good, like Children of Bodom, and I'm getting into Trivium's record, definitely. And actually getting into their first record, when the very first one before Roadrunner got involved. Yeah, there's a lot of good bands out there. I'm still an old 80s metalhead. I can't get away from it. If I have a choice, I'll just put on an old Exodus CD or an old Slayer CD.
Well, you made a firm statement about that on this album with the lyrics. I mean, for, you know.
Yeah.
It's
Yeah, there's one song called Army One that I was kind of...
Indeed.
In a way, thinking just some of the bands that have struggled through, even though they had hard times in the 90s. Like, you know, they lost Maiden lost Dickinson, got Blaze Bailey, Priest lost Halford, got Ripper, Anthrax, got Bush. Just how they survived, even though it was difficult and the sales went down for them, and they just kept fighting through. And because they kept fighting through, metal's coming back, which helps my band survive. So.
Of course. This is probably the toughest question I'm going to ask you today. Because I know they're all your wee babies, but which song is the best you ever wrote, and why?
Which song?
Yeah.
No, I couldn't answer that one.
Give it a shot.
It's gotta be a couple. Well, the one that started it all, it's not my favorite song at all, Alice in Hell. That's not my favorite one.
No.
It's probably the biggest one for us. The one that goes over live the best, Shallow Grave, an AC/DC type of song.
Oh, yeah.
But that's not my favorite. I don't know. It's not on this record. Probably song Never Neverland or Fun Palace. In the second record.
Love the songs too.
Never Neverland. That's what I'd say.
Okay. I'd like to dig a little tiny bit into Jeff Waters, the person. If you don't mind too much. On 10 Years in Hell, there's this presenter on television who interviews you, and he says, dope-smoking, beer-drinking, carousing heavy metal musicians?
Mm-hmm.
No, sir, not the young Jeff Waters from Ottawa. He's been working on quitting the cigarettes, even. What did you think when you watched those clips, when you put 10 Years in Hell together?
Oh, the early stuff? Yeah, when I watched the early clips, it was funny, because I was trying to keep everybody sober and healthy, because I knew that even before I went on the road, I knew that, you know, heroin was not good and cocaine was not good, and that was going around in the early days. Not with me, but with other guys, and I knew that, you know, 12 beers a night was probably not a healthy way to start a career, and I basically ended up in a band with a lot of guys where there were a lot of problems. Maybe one guy had a problem with drugs and the other guy had a severe alcohol. But I myself had the same problem, and I was kind of fighting that too. And I cleaned up. You know, in the beginning, it was, I knew that, you know, when I had to go to work and go on tour, clean up and dry up. But then when we were off tour, it was just a big party again. So, and after a year of doing that, we said, ah, fuck it, party 24 hours a day, you know. It's hard to stay away from that once you're already in it. But, yeah, 93, you know, from 88 to 92 was about 4 years of, you know, pretty serious partying for everybody involved, including myself. But in 93, I realized it was just too excessive, and a lot of guys don't make it past that point. A lot of people just finish their careers up, and they're drunks or they're drugs and ruin their whole careers, and it's done. I was lucky. I managed to get out of it in time where it didn't damage me as much. It sure screwed up my brain, I'm sure, for those. But I survived enough.
But you're here today.
Yeah, that's the main thing.
A lot of us are happy that you are. In an aside on 10 Years in Hell, you mentioned that you are more the studio guy, whereas Cobain Farr was the live guy. He was, you know, the live guy. Yeah. And I can't help thinking that maybe, as a musician, you have to promote yourself, of course, but there's a sort of shyness that you sense when you watch interviews with you. Hand on heart, is the stage a necessary evil?
No.
No?
When you got a broken ankle or you're sick or something, whatever, it's not fun. But even in the shittiest touring conditions, when you're, a lot of people don't know that, and it's not, you know, it's nothing for them to worry about, and it's not a complaint, but there's times when even the biggest bands would go out and there's no showers, there's no food, the bus is late, you have to get out and push the bus trailer out of a big field of mud because you get stuck, and it happens to every, it doesn't matter how big you are or small you are as a band, and you have shitty days, and you miss home, and you you have problems with your girl or your kids or your, fuck, you name it, there's a million things that can ruin your day, but the cool thing about at least me and people I'm around is that you can have the shittiest day in the world, and as soon as the intro tape rolls or it's just about 3, 4, 5 minutes before showtime, all of a sudden any problems that you had are just gone. Mm. And it's like, yeah, you know, I'm always like that. I start warm up, play guitar an hour and a half before the show to 1 hour before the show.
Mm.
Or no, let me get this right. An hour and 15 minutes before the show, I start playing guitar for half an hour to 45 minutes before the show. Then I walk around and I do stretches and I sing a little bit and warm up and stuff and stretch every muscle in my body. And then I go get a coffee and relax and try to keep my nerves from getting, because I always get nervous.
Uh-huh.
And then about 5 minutes before the show, you walk down on the stage, I stand behind the stage, and then all of a sudden it's like a shot of cocaine. It's just like unbelievable rush.
Mm.
You know, even when you're playing, you know, shitty little 200-300 seater clubs, or you're playing a massive festival, it's the same feeling for me. Is it doesn't matter what's going on, you just, that's what you're living for on the road. And then you get there and you just walk out, and no matter what just happened 10 minutes ago or an hour or 6 hours ago, you get out there and it's like, yeah, you know. And it's not even for the fans, it's just something, almost first you do it for yourself. It's just like, how could you not enjoy yourself doing this for a living? You know, playing metal music, it's just the coolest thing. And the fans see that too. They can tell if you're faking it or if it's fun.
Of course.
They know.
It's easy to tell. Do you find it, I mean, you mentioned home and family and stuff. Do you find it difficult to balance? I mean, you have...
No, not really. I block it out. A lot of guys I see on the road walk around with their cell phones, which I have, Blackberries, their cell phones, whatever.
Mm.
And they're always, like, I even have one or two guys on the bus like this. They're always off the bus, you know, not enjoying their day.
Mm.
They're talking to their kids and their family and their girl and their friends at home and missing home and everything. And I try to explain to the one or two new guys that, you know, guys, block it off.
Mm.
You know what I mean? You're in Copenhagen. You're in Europe, you know? Mm. You got to separate it. You can't waste your whole entire great opportunity and fun vacation.
Mm.
Stressed and depressed and all that about missing home and all this stuff. See, you just got to get on. And I just block it off and shut it off as much as I can and enjoy it.
That's the only way to do it,
yeah.
I suppose. Now, it's been almost... Well, it's been more than 2 decades now. As a
2 minutes, buddy.
Yeah.
No, go fast. I'll talk fast, too.
Ready. 2 decades as a performing metal artist. with all the ups and downs, it's not all been love and butter all the way.
Mm.
What's the single most important lesson all these years in the business have taught you, the lesson you would bring on to a new band, for example?
Don't get caught up in drugs and heavy alcohol. That's number one.
Mm.
How about top three? Number
okay.
two, you mean lessons for new bands?
Yeah.
Learn about the business yourself. Absolutely learn about the business, or you're just going to do what a lot of bands do, which is ride high real quickly, and when it crashes and all comes down and one or two of them end up in rehab and the other one ends up quitting the business and all that stuff, there's no money for anybody because everybody else has taken it. And you sit back and go, we did all the work and somebody took our money. That's number two. That's number three is enjoy yourself and have a lot of fun. Life is too short. Just have a good fucking time. Any band that's able to get on a tour bus like this that costs fucking 800 euros a day, if you have the opportunity to do this, which thousands of bands do, I see guys on every bus just all moping and depressed and complaining and whining, and it's ridiculous. I mean, this is like a mansion, a luxury hotel on wheels.
So enjoy
it. People feed you, they give you money to eat.
Mm.
You know, I just went out and had a steak and I could have had a bottle of champagne if I wanted. They give you the money to go do it. You enjoy it. Have fun. You know, don't complain. Just enjoy life.
Mm.
If you can play guitar for a living, it's the coolest thing in the world.
Sounds like good lessons.
Yeah.
Well, thanks a million for answering my questions.
No
do you
problem.
Have any last shout-outs for
yeah,
our
I
readers?
Want this CD.
Oh.
No, just, you know, if you like metal music, you know, any kind of real metal music, then there's probably a few songs you might like. Cool thing about Annihilator is there's some... And again, one of the reasons why we're probably still alive and kicking is if you like one song, you're probably not going to like the next one. There's a lot of Annihilator fans, hardcore Annihilator fans, they like Annihilator because of the changes and the different styles. But what I find is cool is a lot of fans say, and I'll overhear this sometime when fans don't know I'm around, you know, in a lineup or something or wherever at a concert, I hear people say, I don't like that singer, I don't like that album, but you know that they're going to buy the next one, because even if this one is not what they like, they know that the next change may be something they really like. So that's what keeps it kind of interesting. Journalists too, they always say, well, you know, I don't know, I didn't really like, maybe didn't like Annihilator's last record, but this new one kicks ass, you know, and it keeps going through. The cool part is if you ask 10 Annihilator fans what their favorite record is, most of the time it's all different. Most of the time. Who's your favorite singer? Well, everybody's got a different favorite singer. You know, it's Randy Rampage, Cobra Fire, Jeff Waters, Aaron Randall, Joe Camo, Dave Patton, you know, so it's all... And I think that's why we're still here. One of the reasons, main reasons, is because it's not the same people all the time playing the same music.
True.
Yeah. I gotta run, man.
Excellent.
Thank you.